This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
Part of my entree back into the arts, and so I just drove down to LA. I played in the band on stage and watched. And I watched because I knew, again, I didn't have a clue as to what was going on. And I watched, and the musical did reasonably well, so they asked me to write another play. So I wrote another with less music, and that did well. They asked me to write another one. And I ended up writing plays without music. And that is how my career began. This was 33 years ago, and it was fortuitous, and it's taken me on this extraordinary path.
The unexpected journey is always so fascinating to me, that you didn't plan to be a playwright.
No, not by any stretch of the imagination. In fact, I think I actively disliked musicals when I was in high school, and it really was fortuitous, and it has to do with this thing where I call it, you know, when the world says yes to you and when the world says no to you, and this other thing I was pursuing, no matter how much I tried, the world never said yes to me. And so I shifted to the side and was doing the law school thing, and then suddenly the world said yes to me. And so I said, sure. So I pursued it, and it became a career that in the end embodies all the things I was interested in, but initially it was certainly something I'd never thought about pursuing.
That's where you met at this musical. Wasn't that where you met David Henry Hwang, too?
Yeah, I was down in L.A., and I was in their music room, the rehearsal room, and there was a knock on the door, and I answered it, and it was this guy with a violin. And it was David, and he said, let's jam. He said it. So we just started jamming on my guitar, and I played guitar and sang, and he played violin. He's an excellent jazz violinist. I mean, very good. And we hit it off, and we eventually ended up forming a band for a while that toured up and down the coast of California, playing at Asian American events. And we're even thinking about bringing it back. In fact, we've been talking about doing something in New York, but we'll see.
I was going to say that because I think it'd be great to tour around as musicians and then talk about playwriting.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, I thought also just trying to maybe construct some things which might be interesting for us, sort of each of us would write sort of kind of a monologue lyric and somehow weave it in together so that we could do something sort of jointly. But it's still being discussed, so we'll see.
That's very exciting. And now you're here at Reed College in Portland. And tell me what you're going to talk about.
I'm going to talk about, the title is The Jamaican Wash Project. And it's about how I am adapting an old play of mine called The Wash. And it's about a Japanese-American family, a traditional kitchen sink drama, I call it. And I'm adapting it to a Jamaican-American family. And so that is what I am working on. And I'm going to talk about the process of how I came to that idea and the process of working on it this past month. We did a workshop and a reading of it. So I'll talk a little bit about the process and why I undertook this.
Because I saw the film of it with Mako and Shab Shimono and Nobu McCarthy, right? Back in the 80s, was it? Or
a while,
early 90s?
Yes, a while ago.
And I loved it, you know, but it's a story about a marriage, essentially, and a marriage breaking down. And it was Japanese-American, but it was also just about this marriage, you know, so it was multiple levels. So what made you want to, or what was the impetus for changing the ethnicity, the race, the culture?
When I first did it, there was something about the play and the way it was received that made me feel, you know, there's something here that makes me want to do it with another cultural or ethnic group. And I'm not sure why, it just felt that perhaps the bones of the piece were so kind of solid and mythic that it would lend itself well to other races, ethnicities. So it's something I kept in mind for a long, long time. And then a couple of things happened which made me think in terms of trying to do this. A friend of mine lives in Mexico, and she was watching Spanish television, and The Wash, the movie, came on Spanish television, dubbed in Spanish. And when she told me this, I thought, how odd. Why in the world would Spanish television, the station, buy the rights to a film and dub it? What is it about the movie that in some way feels comfortable for them? So it got me thinking about this idea again of adapting the play into another culture. And so just the trajectory of my work has been working a lot with the idea of the intersection of African Americans and Asian Americans through a series of pieces that I'd done over the years, and I'm going to talk about that. But it ultimately ended up with me thinking, well, what would happen if we adapted The Wash, a piece about people of color, to another group that was also a family of color? You know, the idea is that as opposed to normal adaptations deal usually with sort of white Eurocentric pieces that are adapted, what if we dealt with two sort of groups on the margins? And it sort of gets away from the idea of this sort of black-white sort of binary in the center, but rather this is going to be sort of Asian-black. It's a very different kind of setup. So I was curious as to what would happen if we did that kind of adaptation. And I approached my friend Stephen Anthony Jones, who runs the L. Rain Hansberry Theater in San Francisco, and he said, let's try it. So we first sat down and thought, what might be a good analog for it culturally? And we decided that, you know, Jamaican Americans might be a possible sort of adaptable family, a familial structure with generations that had come here, strong patriarchy. So then we sat down with an actor friend of ours, Carl Lumley, who's a very good actor. And Carl is Jamaican American. You know, I don't think most folks know that, though. He read the piece and he said, this is my mother and father. Let's do this. So given Carl's sort of interest in it, we decided to have a workshop. So in January, the beginning of it, we did 1 week. And I went away, did rewrites. We came back for another week. And then we read the piece. And reading worked very well. And so it got us thinking that, you know, there's potential here to actually go to full production. So I'm going to work on it some more, and we're going to open the season at Lorraine Hansberry later this year with the Jamaican Wash project.
So are all the characters Jamaican, or is there a mixture of Asian and Jamaican?
No, it's all Jamaican. In other words, it's totally a sort of shift into this other world. And sort of within that world, though, we tried to find sort of commonalities that can be brought over from the initial one. For example, the idea of stinky food in the first piece, the Japanese-American one, shifts over to, we were trying to think, what is something like that that is popular in sort of the West Indies, and that could be something like that in which they might brag about it. And we came up with peppers. The whole idea of each of the islands, they all have their own pepper, you know, Scotch bonnet, Trinidad scorpion, you know, and so it's varying degrees of hotness, and that's what people brag about. And so that became, for example, something that shifted over and changed in terms of the Jamaican American family.
You're listening to Stage and Studio. I'm Dee Mae Roberts, talking with playwright, prolific and award-winning playwright Philip Kangatanda. And if you missed any of this interview, you can listen on stageandstudio.org. I just think that's a fascinating process. For one thing, I'm wondering if this gives the play another life, you know. So often with Asian American plays, perhaps not yours, but in many, mm-hmm. from a lot of playwrights, they're not produced because the obvious thing that people say is, oh, we just don't have any Asians in our community, yeah. You know? So is this a way to extend the life of a play or to give it a whole different life?
Well, it certainly is a way of giving it a whole different life. And it is true to some degree. The idea, if you know, an Asian American-centric work, a specific work, it doesn't seem to have any kind of life beyond its initial production. And it gets into this question, too, of which I'm playing with, is what is a classic? What makes a classic? And, in fact, can a play like The Wash be considered a classic, such that it can have a continued life, that it can be brought back, and that there is a relevancy to the piece, the material is still fresh, and that America can still look at this piece and say, yes, it's alive. So in that sense, you know, it's an adaptation can also bring new life for the piece. And I didn't think of it that way, but it's true that there is that possibility of giving it new life and also interest reflected back on the original material. My actual long-range plan is to see if I can adapt The Wash, not only with a Jamaican-American family, but I've been talking to the people who run the Middle Eastern American Theater Company, Golden Threads, and I met with the woman who runs it, Taranj Yagiazarian. And we've talked about perhaps adapting it to either an Iranian-American or Armenian-American family. You know, I'm relying on her to sort of kind of help me out with this. So we thought we'd take it slowly. And so after our discussions, we decided the first step is she would set up some very informal meetings with groups of people. and that they would read it sort of in a very comfortable setting if they agreed to do this, and after reading the material they felt comfortable in trying it. And then we'd read it informally and talk about it and see if, in fact, there was that possibility of anything that could carry over, that there was something in the core of the piece that would adapt. And if it seems to work, we'll go to the next step and perhaps bring some actors in and do a workshop. But the idea is to take it very slowly and see if, in fact, it can adapt. And the reason I'm interested in doing this, it has also to do with this progression in terms of my working with material that deals with sort of the intersection of Asians and African Americans, and that everything I write has a lot to do with what I'm trying to figure out in the world. And race and culture has always been a very sort of big theme in my works, because it has a lot to do with me negotiating the world as an American, moving through it over these years. And it's at a point where I began thinking, well, maybe there's a way of doing a piece, an adaptation like this, where both groups, in other words, the cast, the actors, the cast, the director, the playwright, all know what we're doing. In other words, I'm bringing in this material that's about Japanese Americans. You folks all know that you're going to help me adapt it to a Jamaican American family. And we go through the piece together, trying to being respectful of the integrity of the piece in each group, each side, each culture. And that by the end, what we come up with is something that's a rather symbiosis. So in other words, it's Jamaican-American. But in fact, in some way, it's slightly altered. It somehow is fresher. That it somehow is a little more inclusive in ways that I can't explain. By that process, it allows us to have material now that in some way maybe reflects sort of the new America. This idea of, and the closest thing I can come up with, is biracialism, you know, where it's almost kind of genetic, and that you may not be able to know it on this kind of exactly why, but in fact, organically, it is different and fresher, and perhaps affording us kind of new ways to look at the material. And again, this is all for me sort of an experiment. You know, I'm not sure where this is taking the material, or if I am accomplishing what I think I'm hoping to accomplish. That is to say, to create material that perhaps just speaks to another kind of experience of material in regard to all these questions about race, cross-cultural, you know, intersection of communities, and that maybe in some small way, this is a way to take material and sort of, again, give it new life and, again, open it up and make it fresher and afford sort of new ways of looking at the material. Hopefully it's not cultural appropriation. You know, I'm trying to avoid all the pitfalls of, is this just another form of kind of a blind casting of sorts? And I'm very conscious of that and trying to make sure that what we're doing, in fact, is different in terms of its intent. So we will find out, you know. So far, it's been very interesting.
Well, it's an interesting experiment, at the very least, and it also made me think if you do take it to different communities, it's almost like you could fashion a whole project of moving a play from one different community to another all across the country just to see, to give people experiences and connections to this play via their own cultures. So I think it's a fascinating experiment, and just the process of adapting in that way speaks to multiculturalism.
You know, that's the idea, that it isn't the final product. It's rather the whole process. So it's the actors and myself sitting down with the material. That is important. That's part of the experience. Then you have the piece that you created, and then you have the performance and the audience's experience of the material, either knowing the history of it or not knowing the history of it, you know, or revealing the history of it after they've seen the piece. Again, so that it's more than just the piece itself, but rather the whole process and the audience's engagement with the material that ultimately is what this is about.
Has there been much of a reaction from the APA, the Asian Pacific American community?
You know, not so far. I'm expecting some, not blowback, but certainly wondering why Philip is doing this. Again, you know, there are employment issues. You know, the whole idea of, as well, more these Asian American roles that now other people are going to have. And what I would always say, in this particular instance, I say, again, we're dealing with sort of, at this point, people of color. So it's on the margins. It's not as if, you know, we're going to sort of the center and having the center take roles from people on the margins. And I'm just, you know, for me as an artist, continuing to want to explore what it is this thing is that I've been working with over the years, whether you call it Asian American, Japanese American, you know, whatever it is to me, I don't want it to be static. And I want to continue to sort of figure out how we all fit together in this world. And this is the only way I know how to do it is by, through my work, experimenting and trying to figure out what works and what doesn't.
Well, you've written more than 20 plays over the last 3 decades. I mean, at least. I didn't count them all, but you have such a huge canon of work. And they've been producing major theaters all across the country. Mm-hmm. So, and I believe, if not all of them, most of them, were from the Japanese-American perspective?
You know, they've varied over the years. And that there was one track has been me exploring being Japanese-American, Asian-American, the relationship between other communities, African-American, Asian. But there's a whole other track of my work, too, which is a little different. You know, I have a play called A Fist of Roses, which has to do with male violence against women. And that was a very long process of, you know, workshopping and exploring the material and coming up with the piece. So my interests vary, you know, that they're not just about being Asian American. There are certain political themes, certain issues in society that interest me. Plays that have been born from dreams, you know, are non-specific in terms of ethnicity. And so it's varied, and it's all part of my interest.
And part of challenging yourself, I would imagine. Mm-hmm. I think also that you're one of the few playwrights that has directed films, not just of your own work, mm-hmm. but, all of your own work, right? Yeah. So you're an independent filmmaker.
Yes. You know, I proudly say I'm one of the few people I think that's participated in Sundance's, both their film division and their theater division as a playwright. And so it's an interest that I've always had along with music, and it's something that, you know, my career in theater has afforded me a chance to return to. So I've been making my own films, and part of it, again, is because I'm interested in doing material the way I want to do the material, you know, and unless you're doing your own films, in directing them in, you know, doing an indie film, it's really hard to have any sense of control. So for me, the whole point of making a film would be that you make it yourself. And that's what I do. I raise the monies with a team I have. I bring up all my friends who are actors in L.A., and, you know, I plan it out as economically as possible in terms of its shooting schedule. And we do it. And so far, you know, all the films have done well. You know, they've all gone to Sundance. And I haven't made a film in a while, though, because it's so much work. And I don't know if I want to tackle that again, you know. So we'll see. I'm thinking about doing another film.
That was my next question, is if you are going to do more films, mm-hmm. and also film your plays, a feature-length film of one of your plays.
You know, we were going to do one of them. I have a play called Johan that I worked on with Danny Glover and Noble McCarthy. And there was a time period where we had a deal with Showtime, and I wrote the teleplay. And again, it's an example of it's very unpredictable as to what's going to happen. So we did all of that, but then I think there was a change in terms of ownership or who ran the company at the time, so the project just got shelved. But I have attempted to adapt things, and The Wash was one that was adapted through American Playhouse, and The Johan was supposed to become a film. And some of my new ideas have to do with adapting some of my film ideas, though I must say, you know, film and theater are very, very different, and so when you adapt from theater play to film, there are problems, you know, that you have to be able to feel it filmically and not theatrically. You know, it's just very different. So especially if you see some early films by people like David Mamet that he did, you know, they're very theatrical. They're very clunky, you know, and it takes a while, I think, for you to sort of feel what a film is. And so I try not to think in terms of adapting a play, because it's better to start from scratch as a film.
Well, that's what you've done too, is just completely write a new script, mm-hmm. and film that. You have been a major playwriting force for the last 3 decades. Mm-hmm. And in case you just joined us, I'm Dimay Roberts, stage and studio, talking with Philip Khan-Katanda, playwright extraordinaire. And it just seems like, you know, the 90s, perhaps, were there seemed to be a high for Asian American playwrights. Mm-hmm. And tell me if I'm wrong, but it just seemed like there was more out there. Mm-hmm. And perhaps more being produced. What is the state of Asian American theater right now?
You know, I think it kind of mirrors sort of what's happening in society in general in terms of, quote, ethnic or racial themed theater companies. You know, it's gone through a big change. And there are actually quite a few new playwrights on the horizon, not even on the horizon, who are doing very good work and getting produced. But it's almost now, it's no longer necessarily a new thing, quote, novelty. It's part of the theatrical canon now, which speaks to how much sort of the idea of Asian American theater thematically has traveled over the years and what it's become in terms of being much more institutionalized. So I don't think people take note of it, and it doesn't get quite the notice in relationship to it being, aha, this new thing, Asian American drama. But there's plenty out there, and it's really built on all that came before it. So in the same way that Susan Lloyd Parks builds on, you know, August Wilson and people that came before her, the newer works also have built on the canon that existed before. And many of them, you know, aren't necessarily realistic. They aren't necessarily linear family dramas. You know, very much they're experimenting with the form, the content, in ways that you would hope they would, that it's not repeating what came before, but building on it, along with these younger playwrights being very much a part of their own sort of generation, and bringing to that all the stuff that's influencing them, both politically, you know, as well as technically. You know, the technology is very different, so how they feel and perceive sort of art and their expressing of it is very different.
Are a lot of these Asian American plays, are they Asian American themed, or are many of them not necessarily Asian?
They are different in that way. You know, some of them don't necessarily have, it's an Asian American playwright, and it's a non-Asian American cast and story. But my own feeling is that it's all part of the sort of expansion of that sort of beginning point of view. You know, everything is built upon it. So even if there's an Asian American playwright now who doesn't want to be known as an Asian American playwright, who doesn't write about Asian American themes, you know, they exist, and they exist as part of a continuum, and they are influenced by all that came before. So even if you say, I am not, and deny, you know, it's also, to some degree, all a part of the sort of continuing growth and continuing redefinition of who we are in relationship to being where it started from, at least Asian American, where, you know, ultimately it may not even, I have a play I wrote a long, long time ago called Bullet-Headed Birds. And these two characters are trying to figure out what's going to happen, you know, eventually, you know, that what's going to happen to this idea of Asian America. And they're looking for the Asian American sound. And they say at the end, like, in the end, we may not even know what it looks like. It may not even look like us or sound like us, but it's part of sort of what was built upon on our sort of skeletons, our bones, you know, our sort of fragments. It's built upon that. And even it may not look like us, sound like us, but it's still part of the continuum.
And what is The Wash is your next project, obviously. Are there other projects in the work?
There are a couple things. You know, I've gotten more interested in music. So there's an opera I'm working on called The Apricots of Andujar, and I'm working with the opera singer John Dykers and the composer Max Dykers. So that's been an ongoing project. And I'm working on a play about Chung Ining Bunker, the original Siamese twins, Chung Ining Bunker. And the play is called I Dream of Chung Ining. And if you don't, I would say to your listeners, if they don't know the story of Chung Ining Bunker, they should just Google it or do a Wikipedia, because they live the most amazing lives. They lived during the 1800s. They're conjoined. They came from Siam, were brought over to Boston to be a freak show. But Chang and Ning were very smart and shrewd, and so they got out of their contract. They took over sort of presenting themselves, and they retired in their early 30s, rich men, and they retired to North Carolina, and they married two Southern Belle's sisters, the Eight Sisters, who were very marriageable, you know, the daughters of a wealthy farmer. They married them, okay? And so they set up two farms, two households, with beds big enough for three people, and they would spend 3 days at one place, 3 days at the other place. The sisters stayed at the homes, and the And the two guys went back and forth. And between all of them, they begat 21 children. And I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, and because it's a theater piece, I can see this happening, but that whole begetting 21 children, that's going to be baffling.
Yeah.
I don't even want to picture it, to tell you the truth.
Well, yeah, I ended up doing something that's sort of like the Mouseketeers, and I'm sure most people don't even remember them, but it's where people call out names and they appear. So it's done that way. So it's kind of tongue-in-cheek where people call out their names, and 21 names are called out, and they all appear on stage. But, you know, of course, they're like, you hold cards or pictures or whatnot. And so that's the way it's done. But yes, they had 21 children, you know, biracial children too. You know, if you see photographs, it's again so much ahead of its time. And two of their sons served in the Confederacy. And the arc of their own lives is really tragic in that by the end, Chung and Ng hated each other. They hated each other to the point they would try to kill each other and that the police would be called out to sit with them. So it's rather really tragic arc in terms of being inseparable and being brothers and with great love, and then by the end being inseparable and hating each other. Yeah, it's just a very unusual, tragic, extraordinary story.
I want to see that. When is that happening? Is that going to be produced anywhere? I mean, I'm sure. Hopefully. And also make a great film, too.
You know it would. And I think several times people have tried to make films out of it. And there have been other films about conjoined twins. I mean, there's like the Farrelly brothers did one that was like, I don't know if you remember that.
That was horrible.
Jeff Daniels and Matt Damon, I think. I didn't see it. But the idea about theater is they don't have to be attached. And so in my play, most of the time they're not attached because they saw themselves as individuals. So theater is much more interesting, I think, theatrically. So they spend a lot of the time separate.
You have a lot more room for imagination that way, which is weird to think about that you would.
It's true. Otherwise, you have to be so literal in film. You know, you just can't be metaphorical. They'd have to be attached. And I think the thing about theater, it's wonderful, it's all sort of metaphorical. You know, it suggests rather than literally is. And that's the fun and beauty of theater.
Well, Philip Kangatanda, what an honor and a great conversation with you today. And thanks so much. And kudos to everything that you do.
Thank you for having me. This was fun.
That was playwright Philip Kangatanda, recorded on location at Reed College. Read more about his plays and films at philipkangatanda.com. You can also get that link and more info at stageandstudio.org, as well as the podcast of this interview. You can also download shows at iTunes, and don't forget to like us at facebook.com/stage_studio, or tweet me with your events at @StageNStudio. Till next time, I'm Dime Roberts. We're going out with more music by John Jang at johnjang.com.
Focus. My name is Ava Lake, and I have with me today Rita Robillard. She's got a show that's at Augen Gallery. You can go to augengallery.com, and that's A-U-G-E-N gallery.com, and get more information about this show and see images from this show. I also just wanted to give you a casual disclosure. I used to be represented by Augen Gallery, so it was kind of difficult to interview artists from there, but I no longer am, so there's no conflict of interests, and I am free now to interview artists that are having shows there. So this show is called, Rita, what do you call the show? And So Again?
No, it's And Then Again.
And Then Again.
And it's Riffs on Trees in the Forest.
Well, okay, so first of all, how did you get to that title? Because I get the riffs on Trees in the Forest. It's a beautiful show, by the way.
Thank you.
Where did the title come from?
Oh, you know, these things just, you're driving along, you're thinking about what you're going to call the show. Mm-hmm. And then again, because I've done so many works about trees in different places, and the piece that has the title for that... Mm-hmm. Part of it is an etching that I created maybe 20 years ago. And then I just have screen printed into it and drawn into that. So, and then again, it's my own art that has been recycled.
Right. So you're revisiting something that you established a long time ago. So, all right. So you have just answered a question for me, which is that you're using printmaking and painting in all of these all of these works.
That's great. They're all individual works. None of them are additioned.
Right. You know. But there is a printmaking element to it, right?
Right.
There's is it a photo silk screen, or what's that original image that you're working with?
Well, the original image is our drawings on mylar, frosted mylar, that then I photographically expose to a screen that's a very high resolution screen. So they're like 300 DPI.
Right.
Yeah.
And then so it's a photo silk screen that you're working with.
Right.
Well, let's just, before we get into the particulars, let's just talk a little bit about what people see when they walk into Ogden Gallery. Like, you describe your work for us, or this exhibition. How about that?
Well, first of all, I'm thrilled that they hung it so beautifully.
It is dropped gorgeous.
I have to say, I think that Bob did a great job, and I'm very pleased. Well, there is a combination of one seven-foot-long piece that really was inspired by my Sitka residency, and it's emblematic of Japanese ways of working in the Edo period, which is what I studied when I was at Berkeley. I really studied only Asian art. And it's a combination of trees, and some of them are actually historical trees from old engravings that are very enormously blown up, combined with the drawings that I did from the Sitka trees, you know, from Sitka, and, you know, there are evergreens, but there are also deciduous trees in that group. And that piece has something that, you know, one wouldn't know. It looks like it's gold foil on it.
Yes.
But in fact, it's actually handprints that are printed in a different color than the gold background. So that whole, it's about restoration, but it's also about destruction, you know, that combination that humans foist on the natural world.
So what I'm hearing here is that when we look at one of your works that's